relief factor, pain relief that's natural, pain relief that works, and pain relief that attacks the source of the pain. That's the experience of tens of thousands of Americans who are taking Relief Factor right now. See their incredible video endorsements at ReliefFactor.com and then order your three-week quick starter pack for just $19.95. That's less than a dollar a day. Find out if it can work for you like it works for me by ordering your three-week quick starter pack today. ReliefFactor.com, ReliefFactor.com. Be the next success story.
If you thought 2016 was important, 2020 is going to be the greatest, most significant election of your lifetime. As a result, we've created a unique additional podcast with our regular guest in studio, former special assistant to President Trump, Boris Epstein. It's called The Battle for 1600. Join us today by subscribing to the podcast for free. Just look for my name, Boris Epstein, and The Battle for 1600. Welcome to GunBroker.com's Second Amendment Friday. I am so thrilled to be partnering with my favorite gun site on the planet. GunBroker.com makes it so easy to visit one page and buy all the weapons, firearms, accessories you could ever need. If you're a gun enthusiast, bookmark their page and visit it at least once a day. Or like me, a little bit more often. I've got my eyes on something truly stupendous right now. It's called the Tactical Jackal Titanium 10mm 1911. It's a little bit pricey, but my, it's the unusual, the special kind of item that you can find at GunBroker.com. And I'm so excited to have GunBroker on board as our new title sponsor every Friday for our Second Amendment celebration. Join us in celebrating the Second Amendment that makes all the others possible with me by going to GunBroker.com right now and discovering the perfect deal. GunBroker.com.
Welcome back, everyone. I am Trish Regan. I'm in for Seb today. And have you seen the latest batch of internal FBI messages between Peter Strzok and Lisa Page, the couple that will go down in infamy? It was quite something. The Daily Caller actually had it. Chuck Ross over there got an early look at this. The Department of Justice is releasing these. And basically, my conclusion from seeing them is that the media was completely used. The woke, naive, lazy, agenda-driven media was basically used by the Obama team, right, the FBI run by James Comey, to push a narrative that, frankly, was nothing but one big giant conspiracy theory. I mean, they're after people like Peter Navarro or, you know, Lord Conrad Black or anybody who's saying, wait a second, we ought to be examining this so that we make sure that we have some integrity right in the system. They're saying that's conspiracy theory. Well, you want to talk conspiracy theory. It's the idea that Donald Trump was somehow in bed with the Russians. His campaign was in bed with the Russians and that they stole the election. Anyway, let me share with you some of these messages because they're really quite something. They really do show how Peter Strzok hid this information that they had about CNN's plans to publish the story. They hid this about then FBI Director James Comey's briefing to Trump regarding allegations in the dossier. I mean, they didn't really come out and admit that they knew what was going on. And also keep in mind how our FBI was really engaging in what I would call disinformation. In other words, they were taking this disinformation, they were feeding it to reporters, and then they were hopeful that those reporters would somehow run with it. One of the texts from Peter Strzok to Lisa Page reads, quote, story no longer Sciutto, now Evan Perez, and they were talking about Jim Sciutto, internal nervousness about the nature of the allegations. I'm glad somebody was nervous about the nature of the allegations. This is Strzok writing to Lisa Page on January 9th, 2017. He also wrote, also Carl Bernstein, yes, that Carl, called OPA, and he got the dossier, his dossier from McCain. Awesome, Lisa Page replies. Let Carl run it down then. Would he put run it down? Run it down. So they were putting this opposition research into the hands of reporters and saying, hey, go chase it down. By the way, did they ever chase it down? No. No, did they actually, you know, check any of the sources in there? Did they bother to look at the fact that Christopher Steele was a, you know, effectively a hired hitman from the Hillary Clinton campaign? The Hillary Clinton campaign that bought and paid for that disinformation, that opposition research. And by the way, Christopher Steele himself employed a guy to do some of the research that our own FBI at the time believed was a Russian spy. So you can't make it up. And then did they ever tell the FISA court judge what was really going on? No. So I'm sorry. The media was used, willingly used, right? Because they had their own agenda. I remember hearing about this at the time, seeing this and thinking, whoa, you know, this is just out there. You want to talk conspiracy theory. But I gave it some due diligence. I didn't report on it because until I had sourced it, I wasn't going to do that. But nonetheless, there are a lot of people out there that don't, you know, think that they need all the sourcing, right? And so they're running with this. You had Clapper, you had Brennan saying some pretty awful things with a ton of conviction. That is wrong. And now they're angry when someone says, wait a second, look at the absentee ballots. You know, there's some anomalies here. Statistically, this doesn't make any sense. Now those people are considered crazy? I mean, I would say it was pretty crazy to allege what they alleged, and there was no remorse. I mean, do you know that as recently as this summer, when Joe Biden was campaigning, the few times he emerged from the basement, he was actually talking about how Donald Trump stole this past election and we can't let them steal it again. So I would only say, you know, everybody's, oh my goodness, you know, that the state of our democracy, the state of our great republic, it is very much under threat and it's because of the Republicans. No. It is because of what the Democrats did for 4 years. They couldn't accept that Americans stood up and said, we're not going to put up with your frankly, your selling of America anymore. And they went out and voted for Donald Trump. They couldn't understand that. They couldn't believe that. It had to have been fraud. And they sat there. They said, not my president. They impeached him. And it was like scandal after scandal after scandal after scandal that they kept throwing at him because they wanted people to not believe in the legitimacy of his presidency. So I'm sorry, but, you know, I get that two wrongs don't make a right. But when people now on the conservative side are asking meaningful questions and they don't want to give them the time of day after we went through what we went through for 4 years straight, that's wrong. That's wrong. I think about how they buried, right, the Hunter Biden story. That's something. They did not want that story out. That was big tech and big media combined. I hope you were listening to my podcast because we covered that at length. In fact, I have a big story on it today, but we covered that at length. I know Seb covered that at length because that is news, right? And sure enough, what do you know? And now it turns out the guy's under, you know, investigation for his tax affairs. CNN reports that he got a diamond, 2.8 carats worth 80 some odd thousand dollars from a guy who was the head of an energy company out of China, now since disappeared, right? The guy's vanished now. His company went under, and apparently you're not allowed to do that in China, or else who knows? Anyway, he's gone. But nonetheless, he was somebody who was believed to have had ties to the CCP. I mean, you don't get ahead in business in China, let's be very clear, without having some ties to the CCP. The CCP allows your very existence. So this guy flies over, has dinner in Florida with Hunter Biden, who's going through a divorce at the time, and he slips him a diamond worth 80-some-odd thousand, according to CNN. Wow. I mean, and by the way, where was that story a few weeks ago? You couldn't report on it. If you dared to even report on these emails that came forward on Hunter Biden's laptop, then you were going to have your account locked. People had their social media accounts locked because they retweeted a story from the New York Post, a newspaper that's been around for hundreds of years. I mean, this is mind-boggling stuff. This is very much our First Amendment that is under threat for political purposes. And it is so wrong. It is not what our founding fathers intended. I don't care what side of the aisle you're on this. I really don't. And I'm an independent, and I try and look at everything fairly through an economic lens, and through a lens of what matters to this country and our future. And I look at this right now and I say, this is really warped. This is all one-sided. You know, they can accuse the president of all kinds of heinous things. They can say he stole the election. They can open a special investigation into whether or not he stole the election with the help of the Russians. But no, nobody can say, gee, this doesn't make sense that we've got, you know, all these absentee ballots suddenly coming in. And they're on one side. I want to get rid of absentee ballots altogether. I mean, I look at it and I say, listen, you know, if you're not willing to go stand in line to vote on election day, it is your biggest privilege, really, as an American, that maybe you don't get to vote. It may sound harsh, but I'm someone who believes you should go with your ID. And granted, there's some extreme circumstances where somebody might not be able to. And basically, they use this pandemic and the extremity of the circumstances in this pandemic to ensure that tons of people could vote absentee. And I do believe the Democrats have been better historically on their ground game when it came to absentee ballots. But look, there's some basic things. You need to prove who you are. We need some kind of cross-check, right, with other states. Because how do I know if I left New York, which I did, how do I know that somebody's not still voting in my name in New York? We need checks and balances when it comes to our votes, the sanctity of our votes. It's all we've got. It's so great to have you here today. Please go to TrishIntel.com. Check me out there. Make sure to download my podcast and subscribe to my YouTube channel. I'm going to be back with more in For Seb Gorka today.
Portions of America First are brought to you by GunBroker.com.
Welcome back, everyone. I am Trish Regan in for Dr. G today, and we're talking about this crazy hack. You know, as much as the mainstream media wants to be distracted with all the things that they're distracted with, there's some real news going on, and that is that America potentially could be put in a very vulnerable position because of this hack, and we don't quite know who did it. I mean, I look at it and say, gosh, you know, the Chinese, because they'd love to get their hands on more information surrounding our electrical grid, as I said at the top of the show, really very much a concern as they look at that grid and they think about the possibility of an EMP attack, which would be hugely catastrophic in just massive ways. In fact, in 2016, the EMP Commission put out a report for Congress saying that if there was a significant EMP attack, 90% of Americans would die within the year because they would die of starvation, desperation, lack of food, lack of water, you name it. This is really, really scary stuff. So we got to talk about it and we got to figure out who's behind this. James Carafano from the Heritage Foundation has some theories. James, it's great to have you here. Welcome.
Hey, it's great to be with you. This is exciting. It's like Mission Impossible 12. Let's unravel the mystery here. So
exciting. I'm like, it's scary. I'm glad that you're excited about it because I'm like, I'm kind of freaked out by it. But you go forward.
Yeah, well, it better fits the Russian MO. And here's why I say that. You know, China did a lot of what was called opportunistic hacking. In other words, what they essentially did was they had an army of hackers and they said, go out, hack whatever you can, give it to us, and we'll give you a color TV or, you know, $20 or something. And they got an enormous amount of information because we had some very poor cybersecurity. And when they were challenged on that by the Obama administration, they said, okay, yeah, we'll stop the hacking. And they shifted their hacking strategy to a much more military strategy and a much more controlled use of hacking tools and really more as almost a weapon of war. And instead, right, that what they shifted in two ways. One is relying on human intelligence. That's why we had this thing with the congressman and way other, just, you know, talking to real live human beings and just getting the data live. And the other thing is the Hoover strategy, which is penetrate the networks and just suck up all the information. That's why, for example, Huawei, why do you want a global telecom? So you can get all the information. You don't have to hack it. You just take it off the line. You probably heard this thing about Chinese drones. All these Chinese drones, all that data can be sucked back to China as well. So law enforcement is flying a drone. The Chinese can be gaining access to that info.
So in other words, they don't need to hack because they may actually have access to the information.
They do hack, and they do develop hacking capabilities, as other people do. But the Russians have primarily relied on hacking as their instrument of choice, and they are often the pioneers of new and innovative ways of hacking. And so apparently a lot of this hacking was new vectors. And so the fact that it's kind of a new innovative way of doing this kind of leads you to believe it's the Russians. And the fact that it's kind of broad spectrum like that also leads you to believe that it's kind of the Russians. And remember, you know, we've checkmated the Russians in so many different places. They're going nowhere in Ukraine, nowhere in Georgia, nowhere in Syria, nowhere in Libya. They got problems in their own backyard in places like the conflict between Armenia and Azerbaijan and in Georgia. I mean, in Belarus. So how do you keep on the offensive with the Russians? How do you keep people's attention?
Why would they do this now? I mean, think about it. Well, what is that about? And then did they think that they would never get figured out?
Well, first of all, they've been doing it since March.
Yeah.
I think they do it because that's what Russians do. I'm just saying, this has always been going back to the Soviet days, is kind of throw the spaghetti at the wall strategy, which is your metric is not necessarily what's my predictable outcome here. Is you do a bunch of stuff and some of it will work. They do this with disinformation and they do it with hacking. So the goal is you constantly assault the other guy looking for weaknesses. So it's kind of typical.
So in other words, China's more strategic about it. I was reading in this EMP report, which was fascinating. One of the concerns was that China, per some of its literature that's basically like CCP textbook stuff, was that you should be looking. They said, this is, I'll quote from Shen Weiyang's the Third World War, Total Information Warfare. This is the People's Liberation Army's quasi-textbook on information warfare. And one of the things that they talk about is how to prepare to exploit an EMP offensively. I mentioned the EMP because it seems that one of the targets in this hacking was our electrical grid, in that they were trying to get information about our most sensitive places, the most important places on the grid. And so according to this, textbook CCP stuff, it's one of the vulnerabilities that you would want to exploit in America. But I guess in your view, and by the way, in the EMP Commission's view, they can already do it if they wanted to, which is quite terrifying in and of itself.
What we see a lot of is we want information on infrastructure so potentially we could control it or mess with it or everything. And that is a common feature of both the Russians and the Chinese. And it is about future exploitation, threatening, whatever. But your point about EMP is really well taken. Even if you believed that the Russians or the Chinese would never dare do this, detonate a nuclear weapon in high altitude and fry the American grid, and risk all the consequences that would come from that. There's also something called space weather, which is this natural phenomenon of high intensity sun activity, which actually produces an identical effect. And this happens on long cycles of over 100 years. The last time we had one was actually when we didn't have a lot of electricity, so nobody really noticed. But we did have telegraphs, and telegraph systems around the world burst into flames because, they had paper tape. And the tape caught on fire from the electrical surge and burned down a lot of telegraph. So, but now that the world's electrified, it's a huge concern. And so even if you didn't believe that, you have to worry about the resiliency of the grid from an electromagnetic overload, because the potential is it might happen as a natural disaster. And here's the other thing. We did a lot of research on this at the Heritage. We have a long history of working in this area at heritage.org.
Okay. Good.
The one thing we found is we looked at all different kinds. America can survive virtually any kind of disaster except for a prolonged loss of the electrical grid.
Wow. Listen, I mean, I wrote a piece on this a few months ago. I wrote it as a reaction to sort of what I was going through in my little New England town when we lost 98% of the town was without electricity for several weeks. I mean, that was crazy. I wound up, you know, camping out at my parents' house because I'm like, oh, wait a second, I can't live without, you know, my Wi-Fi. And you couldn't go to the bank to get out money in town. You couldn't do anything. You couldn't go to a store, a grocery store. It was nuts. And I thought, what would happen if 98% of the country experienced something like this, which led me to a lot of my research. I mean, you guys have been all over this for a long time. I want to continue the discussion. I'm here with James Carafano from the Heritage Foundation. You can see this work that they have done on EMPs and some of the threats that we face from international foes at heritage.org. I am Trish Regan. TrishIntel.com is the website. I'm in for Seb today, and we're going to be right back.
The Tunnel to Towers Foundation is marking its season of hope, and they need your help. The foundation is honoring America's heroes by donating 36 homes in 36 days. That's one home a day from Thanksgiving through New Year's Eve. Tunnel to Towers is gifting homes in more than two dozen states across our nation. They're bringing hope to great Americans, our catastrophically injured veterans, Gold Star, and fallen first responder families. The foundation is giving thanks to all of those who have sacrificed so much for us and to the many people like you across this country who have supported their efforts to honor our nation's heroes. Join Tunnel to Towers on its mission to do good. Donate $11 a month by going to t2t.org. That's T, the number 2, T.org. T2T.org. Help bring hope to America's heroes and their families. Thank you.
Portions of today's program are brought to you by Prison Fellowship.
Welcome back, everyone. I'm Trish Regan from TrishIntel.com. Good to be here with you today on America First and for my friend Seb Gorka. And I'm joined by another friend, James Carafano from Heritage Foundation. James, fascinating conversation, terrifying conversation about the hacking attack that has just happened. I mean, the tentacles are sort of everywhere, right? They're saying that pretty much every Fortune 500 company may have had some kind of compromised position as a result of this. Can you walk us through what it really was?
Well, so again, the interesting thing is it was a novel attack, so kind of a new way of doing this. And this gets to a really fundamental lesson about cybersecurity. This is not a problem to be fixed, right? You have a wayward teenager, you take the car away, problem fixed, right? Mm-hmm. Cut off their allowance, right? This is an environment that we live in. This is like saying, I never want to see a snowstorm again. Well, that's not going to happen, right? So you survive, you compete and survive in the cyber environment. It's the only thing where you can be completely safe one day and completely vulnerable the next. So it really is about surviving in the environment like surviving in a jungle. So it's a constant threat because it's a dynamic, nonlinear environment. So I think the good news is, from the government perspective, it doesn't seem like the penetrations got to very sensitive government information, at least mm-hmm. that's what we understand. What's disturbing is it started in March and apparently took months to identify it. Yeah. That to me is probably the most troubling and disturbing thing.
How does that happen? Do they just kind of get in there and they weave their way in and they just kind of plant themselves?
So this is where the forensics come in, which is the first thing you have to figure out is how did they get in? And then how do you close that door to stop that vulnerability? Then the next step is you have to figure out what kind of damage did they do? And those are both kind of critical steps that we're in. What was even more worrisome to me is that in the SolarWinds hack, apparently they actually got a bunch of hacking tools. So it was like breaking a safe cracker out of prison. Right. Now the guy can go rob more banks. So this is probably going to start a whole cycle of need to kind of relook and rethink cybersecurity. And look, we've been under great in the last year. People have really taken this mission much more seriously because the threat is increasing. Well, and that, yeah. I think that's why it's even scary to say.
It's the new kind of warfare, isn't it?
Yeah. We were on guard, right? It wasn't like, you know, somebody forgot to lock the bank door. I mean, we were actually paying attention to this threat and somebody kicked our butt. That's scary.
Yeah, that's scary. So what does that tell you about sort of where we rank? I mean, do we similar things? I hope we do.
So I once had this really interesting conversation with somebody that said, you know, nobody in the world can do some of the stuff that we can, but we can't protect ourselves from some of the stuff we can do. So
that's a little messed up, right? Because we ought to be able to know. I mean, if we can actually do it, we should be able to put in. You got to have good defense too, not just good offense.
But you know, but again, it's a constantly changing environment. So we have serious offensive capabilities that we can use as well, and we do use those. But the reality is everybody's constantly chipping at the other guy. So you're constantly looking for new ways to get at the other guy, and the other guy's constantly looking for new ways to get this. This gets to another issue, which is a lot of this capability is actually resident in the private sector. And, you know, this notion about, you know, that America's got incredible talent, technological talent, but it's like, oh, we're Google. You know, we're not America. We're Google. We're Facebook.
Yes.
The reality is, dude, you are America. You're an American company. And if you don't bring your stuff to the table to help protect your own country, you're going to be the first thing on the chopping block. So the private sector has an enormously role to play here. The responsibility of tech companies in the world today is every bit as large as manufacturers were in World War II when we had to crank out tanks and airplanes and ships at sea.
That's such an interesting and important point. And you think about historically over the last 20 years, for example, our corporate relationships with China, right? A lot of CEOs, they're not thinking about what it's going to be like 10 years down the road or 20 years down the road because they want to make sure that they, you know, and I understand it, stockholders, they want value, right? And so you're looking at how good are my quarterly earnings? And if I can access that market, maybe I'm willing to give up some of this intellectual property. I mean, that's the problem, right? They say they're stealing it, but American companies are willingly signing it over so that they have a chance to be in that market. And I think that's where you need government to come in, to step in and say, wait a second.
Well, we need the private sector to wake up. You know, terrible signal is to say, well, we're thinking about appointing the head of Disney, the former head of Disney, as ambassador to China, when he's one of the guys that opened the door for the Chinese to do all kinds of malicious activity in the U.S. What the heck kind of signal are you sending to China? It says you're not serious about protecting your own country.
Oh, I could talk to you all day about this. We'll have to save it to next time. James Carafano, really fascinating stuff. Check out all of his work at heritage.org. James, good to have you here today. Okay, we got a lot more coming up. We're going to talk about the economy. We're going to talk about our future economy, about the markets with Steve Moore a little bit later in the program, noted economist. I'm looking forward to it. Don't go anywhere. Trish Regan here in for Seb. We'll see you right after this.
This is Second Amendment Friday on America First, brought to you by GunBroker.com.
GunBroker.com, the world's largest digital marketplace to buy and sell firearms, ammunition, accessories, well, just everything. The gun selection is unmatched with over 1 million daily listings. At GunBroker.com, you are certain to find the gun of your dreams. I have. More than once. Bookmark it. Shop today, especially in these trying times when ammunition is just so hard to find. Go to GunBroker.com like I do. You won't regret it. And so excited to have with us today. He's a guest we don't hear enough of on America First. He has created something called the Warrior Poet Society. And it's an organization you should be a part of. It is a new streaming platform at watchwpsn.com. He's John Lovell. John, welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having me back. Always a pleasure, man.
This guy, if you haven't met him, if you haven't heard of him, he's a former operator. He's a firearms instructor. Do you remember when you were kids? Well, you know, I'm an old guy. G.I. Joe in the UK was called Action Man. And there was one version with a beard. It was modeled on this man, John Lovell. That's who he is. He is the bearded G.I. Joe. Welcome back, my friend. Can I just start just totally out of left field? As we were prepping in the break, this came to me. Based upon my experiences of the last 6 months in the political sphere in America and just some deep discussions we've had on our long-form YouTube stuff, you talk about a topic that is dear to my heart, especially because of who my father was, well, how he suffered under communism, how he escaped from a prison. But it's a topic basically nobody talks about except you and a couple of people on my show. And it's one word. It's courage. Why does nobody talk about it, John? What's happened?
It is a great, great question. We have a more of a society that's heroizing victimhood, you know, and it doesn't leave a lot of room for courage to be held up. It's like we're so focused on those great wrongs that have happened. And it's a good thing to want to right the wrongs, but to obsess over a victimhood mentality kind of takes that great age-old topic of courage and kicks it to the curb. It's no longer the great attribute that all societies throughout history have heralded. Courage is one of the top virtues, and now it's never discussed. It's pretty damning for a culture to just oddly omit something like courage because it's the testing point of all virtue.
Yeah, no, it is the glue. It makes the other virtues possible. And to your point on victimhood, yes, you can help victims, but when the only people talking about their victimhood are entitled middle-class individuals, mostly white, overeducated millennials who love to have their soy milk lattes, it's not the people from the hood. It's not the women getting beaten up by their boyfriends. It's not the men getting raped in prison. It's not the real victims. It's the people who play victimhood. So I'm so grateful for what you do with the Warrior Poet Society. We need 100 like it. Tell us why you've gone from, you know, teaching people how to defend themselves, how to be responsible with a firearm. Why have you become a media mogul? What is this new network and what can people find on it?
You know, there's a lot contained in traditional values and a traditional masculinity that is both vulnerable and kind and compassionate and romantic, but is also ready to flip a switch and be incredibly fierce and strong and courageous. That's a really good and attractive masculinity. It resonates with an incredible amount of people, though that kind of dichotomy, for lack of a better word, to be fully a lion and fully a lamb at the same time, it seems to be an endangered species, and it shouldn't be. And so when we model those traditional values and a bold and traditional masculinity, people take notice and they want to be a part of it. It's reawakening men around the globe to pick up that good banner that should be waved.
And so what, you've got a new streaming service. It's called the Warrior Poet Society Network. What can people find on it?
Man, we've got all kinds of stuff. And people typically, once they log in and visit what we've got, they're blown away. They know us on YouTube because we're quite popular on YouTube. But here, the production value just goes through the roof. It looks like legitimate TV shows. And we have full training classes, but also very, very entertaining shows. We just dropped another show called Unbreakable Mind just a few days ago. Contestants just being pushed to the limits, going through all kinds of travails and really growing throughout the process. But the reviews are rave.
But I heard there's a real problem with your new network. I mean, there's a huge complaint from the people who are watching it. You haven't found that person to do the voiceovers for all your products. Is that correct?
The person you're flexing on me right now because you have the perfect radio voice.
No, but that's very kind.
You're going to be the trailer guy.
You know where to find me. You know where to find me. In the meantime, you got to check out two of these things. He's kind of down on Twitter, and I get it because they're fascists on Twitter. You can follow it. You can find him there as well. John Lovell 275. But really, it's YouTube.
It's the Warrior Poet Society. It is warriorpoetsociety.us is the website. And this, I'm so excited. This is what we need. Forget Hulu, Netflix, and all that garbage. Just such garbage. It is civilization-destroying garbage. Go to watch WPSN. That's warriorpoetsocietynetwork.com. So that's watch Warrior Poet Society. So it's watch WPSN.com. Check it out today. Become a subscriber to that organization. If you want to hear more of these kinds of stories that John is focusing on, in my second book, people obsessed about these little, I call them the hero's vignettes. Between my analysis of my time in the White House and the threats we face as a nation, I just told stories of great heroes. From Stephen Decatur, the youngest naval captain in U.S. history fighting the Barbary Pirates. From Chesty Puller, just the incredible stories about Chesty Puller's career in the Marine Corps. To civilians like Whitaker Chambers. Check it out. It's called Why We Fight, Defeating America's Enemies with No Apology. And you will know what it is this man is trying to bring back, not just to our nation, but our civilization. God bless you, John. The whole team, keep doing what you do. Have a very Merry Christmas. I'm Sebastian Gorka. This is America First on the Salem Radio Network, broadcasting across the nation to hundreds of stations, millions of listeners, live streaming on YouTube, on Facebook, available also on the YouTube Alternative Rumble. Wherever you want to find us, we're there. I'm Sebastian Gorka. This is America First. Let's get back to the show with Trish Regan.
Welcome back, everyone. It's good to be here with all of you. I hope that you are subscribed to my podcast. If you haven't subscribed, please do that right now before you do anything else, okay? Drop what you're doing. It's on Apple iTunes. It's on Spotify. It's on Amazon. It's on trishintel.com. That's my website. You can go there right now and download the podcast and subscribe to it. You can subscribe to my YouTube channel, my Rumble channel, and of course, I'm on Facebook as well. It's good to be here with all of you, as I said, in for Seb, at a very important time of year, at a very important time in the nation, of course, but also a very important time of the year because it's Christmas. And, you know, there's very few things in life that are as special, I think, as one, being a kid and opening your gifts, and two, being a parent and seeing your little kids open their gifts on Christmas morning. I mean, these are memories that get etched in all of our brains forever, right? And given that it's Christmas time, and I know how charitable all of you are, I want to take a moment to talk about Angel Tree, which is a very important charity to Seb. And, you know, everything I hear about it, it's so wonderful because it's making a difference in little kids' lives. When a parent's in prison, I mean, that's something that can be enormously challenging, obviously. And it's not the little kid's fault, right, that their parent is in prison. But they wind up paying a very big price, especially at Christmas. And that is where Prison Fellowship's Angel Tree program steps in. Your donations, anything that you can give right now. This is what it is making it possible, if you would, for these kids to have a little bit of normalcy at Christmas. They receive, thanks to your generous donations, a gift from their parent, a personalized note from mom or dad, and access to a Bible in either English or Spanish. You know, last year, the Angel Tree program blessed over 300,000 of America's prisoners, the children of America's prisoners, with gifts. And here are just two of them, two of these little kids, telling us why they love being part of an Angel Tree Christmas.
Spending time with my family and knowing that my dad cares. He's sending me all these gifts thanks to you. And I really like to thank you for it.
I like the presents that my dad sent me. I know that you guys care and he cares. So I just want to thank you for that. And I love Christmas.
Thank you, Angel Tree, for doing all that you do. Because you don't have to do this, but you choose to do it. And I really appreciate it.
Aw, thank you. Thank you to all of you who helped make a difference in their lives, and you have an opportunity to make a difference in so many kids' lives. It's your turn to share the love of Christ through a donation to Seb Gorka's Angel Tree campaign. Just go to sebgorka.com, click on the Angel Tree banner, or phone your donation by calling our special number 1-888-206-2794. That's 1-888-206-2794. And for a gift of just $220, think about it, you can bless 10 kids. 10 kids with personalized Christmas presents, a personalized note from mom or dad, and an easy-to-read copy of the Bible in English or Spanish. This is Trish Regan from TrishIntel.com. Go to the website, check out the important stories of the day. We've got much more to discuss. I'm here for Seb Gorka. I'll see you after this.